Nashville Predators are proud to select from the Memorial Cup champions, the Windsor Spitfires, Ryan Ellis. And with our selection from HB71, Kevin Fiala.
Welcome back to the On the Forecheck podcast. My name is Brian Bastin, and today I am joined once again by Eric, a fellow writer at the On the Forecheck and a very, very busy man around this time of year. How you doing today, Eric?
Good. Draft stuff starting to catch up with me, so excited for Tuesday and Wednesday to come and go, but doing well.
Yeah, I mean, you said when we found out we had pick 11, you were pretty excited, but I think the fatigue probably starts to set in right around this time, huh?
Yeah, also just not being prepared normally for having to do draft stuff in October.
Yeah, right.
It's been a bit of an adjustment, so.
Yeah, but hey, I mean, it's, at least you get to look at, like, you know, potential top 10 players instead of the bottom of the first round. I'm trying to frame it in that way. You know, and the way this offseason's shaping up, you'll probably get to do it again next year. So, yeah. So this is part two of On the Forecheck's draft preview podcast. So we're going to kind of pick up where we left off. And since we ended with Nashville's pick at number 11, just a quick interesting piece of trivia. Nashville's had the number 11 pick overall twice, once in 2009 and 2014. Now, Eric knows this, but I found this out just now from looking it up. So the last two times they picked at number 11, the two players were Ryan Ellis in 2009 and Kevin Fiala in 2014. So not a bad hit rate, even if Fiala is no longer with the team. But yeah, so there's been players, and Nashville's done fairly well at this position. So I think there's a lot of options available. But we've gone over that already. And so what we're going to start with, and we're probably going to go a little bit quickly, is what's going to happen after Nashville picks. And so we're not going to run through and do every single pick between 12 and 37 when Nashville picks again. But I'm going to we'll talk about a few things. So there are four central teams that will be picking after Nashville. Chicago at 17, Colorado at 25, with St. Louis at 26, and then Dallas, of course, will be picking at number 30 as the runners-up. What kind of players, what kind of things do you think those four teams are going to be targeting at those positions?
Yeah, so, I mean, Chicago's up first at 17, and that's an interesting pick for them, I think, and I think it's probably a bit lower than they thought they were going to end up being, but I think that area of the draft is right there in the teens. There's like a good run of forwards that are all going to be available there. Rodion Amirov, Jack Quinn maybe, or not, who's to say, Jacob Perreault, Maverick Bourque, Dylan Holloway, Roni Hirvonen, Connor Zeri. I think one of those guys is probably going to be the direction they're going in. I mean, you know, this is a team that has needs across the board. There's no reason they shouldn't be taking best player available, and I think a number of those guys could pan out well for them.
Is Maverick Bourque, is that any relation or no?
No relation, unfortunately.
Yeah, just wondering. Okay. So that's Chicago, and again, I think it'll be interesting to see what they do. I think there's just what I read a rumor about maybe an hour ago that they're sending.
Ole Matta.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's official, yeah.
So, okay. You're probably right that they could pretty much go any direction at this point. They're kind of in a weird spot with their team, maybe getting themselves out of the let's bring everybody back in and try one more time approach. So, all right. So that's Chicago. And then about eight picks later, we have the Colorado Avalanche, which, man, I hope they go with a bad player at this position because they're already stocked. So what do you think they're going to go there?
Yeah, I mean, again, there's, you know, this draft is obviously really deep. I think this is the territory when you're in your early, or I guess mid-20s, where some other defenders start coming onto the board that you can maybe take a look at. I'm higher on Noel Gundler, but I have heard his name circulated in the early to mid-20s a lot. I think he's more deserving of a pick higher in the draft than that, but if he's someone that's available to Colorado, I think that's a player they could hop on. If someone like Connor Zeri falls, another example. But then on defense, I mean, you're going to have Helga Granz available. You're going to have Emil Andre available. You're going to have William Wallander available. I know I have heard, and this is a player who's really hard to project just because he was injured so much of last year and has unfortunately hit another setback. I've heard Justin Barron's name potentially sneaking into the end of the first round here. I was a defenseman for Halifax in the QMJHL. And then another player who I think is going to probably be taken here in the back 10 of the first round is Brendan Brisson. And I could see a team like Colorado making that choice, especially since they have got strengths at pretty much every position on the board.
I'm not familiar with the prospect pool, but I mean they've got not really very many pressing needs in their current lineup. I mean they've got a great defense core, and when Sammy Girard's on the third pair. And I know again that's I think I might be higher on Sammy Girard than most. I think you're a person that's not as high on him as I am. But again, I think it's more sentimental on my side. Because he was the first, I think he's the first, player I saw when I went to development camp that year. I remember watching him, I was like, oh, I like this guy a ton. And then, of course, they traded him like not very long after that. So I've learned not to get attached, I guess. All right. So that's the very next pick after the Colorado Avalanche is the St. Louis Blues.
Yes.
26.
Yeah, I think, it's hard to, my strategy is always best player available, right? So, if you've got someone like John Jason Paterka there, I think that's a smart pick for them. They've dived into the German talent pool before when they drafted Dominic Bock a few years ago. But I can also see them going defense here. So, if Barron's still on the board, maybe my assumption is Helga Granz will be gone by then, but I could be wrong there. Who knows how high Braden Schneider or Caden Gooley will go. Two other names, Toby Nummela and someone else who's been rising a lot is Ryan O'Rourke. So this is where a lot of defenders start hitting the board, and I think that St. Louis, especially, pending how the Petrangelo situation shakes out, but even regardless if it goes well for them, they've got a pretty solid group of forwards, young forwards on their team. So I think defense might be their move there. But again, if you think John Jason Paterka is your best player available and he's there, there's no way to grab, not that no reason you shouldn't grab him.
Awesome. All right. So after St. Louis, we've got Anaheim with their second pick of the first round. Then Ottawa with pick number 3, I think, and this is the one they got from the Islanders, which I'm trying to remember what trade that was.
What trade was that?
Yeah, that's a good question. I can.
Oh, Jean-Gabriel Pageau.
Oh yeah, that's right. Wow, that's right. Yeah. Okay. So, and then at 30, we have the Western Conference champion Dallas Stars, the off-season champions, as somebody once called them before this season started. So where do you think they go with at this pick? Cause, I mean, this is essentially, it's basically you're in that second round territory.
I think this is the area where, teams start making moves that I think on draft night are viewed as questionable or reaches. I mean, you take a look back to last year, right? I think it was Boston who took John Beecher at the end of the first round, and that was always kind of viewed as a bit of a reach, although he did have a very good season at Michigan this past year. So I think this is where some of that's going to start to happen. And a couple names, I guess, that come to mind are, as I mentioned earlier, Brendan Brisson. I actually don't think Brendan Brisson would be a reach at the end of the first round, but right. I can't see him getting out of the first. I think someone like Tyson Forster is probably going to end up around this area just because of his shooting talent. I can see someone who I'm very low on. I do not think he is even a top 62 talent in this draft, but a lot of teams apparently like him, and Jake Neighbors going around this area.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. Maybe Jan Mischak. And if you're still looking for a defender, Jeremy Poirier, you know, William, I'm sure one of William Wanland or Andre will be still on the board at this point. So I think there's a lot of directions they can go, but, you know, I think this could be the area where, you know, like a forward like Forrester, Brisson, or Ozzie Weisblatt, or even Sam Colangelo sneaks in, and a team snags them there.
Yeah, I mean, and there's a little bit of history at pick 30 of teams, you know, taking a, I guess, at the time, what was viewed as a risky player to take, but had really good shooting talent with Eli Tolvanen 3 years ago.
Yeah.
Which I guess I wish I was more plugged into the Predators back then when that happened, because I don't know. I mean, what was the feeling like back then? And we'll only stay on this just for a few seconds, but you know, what was the feeling like as you saw him slide down the draft board?
Yeah, I mean, I think that was a more curious case in that, like, I don't think anyone thought he wasn't a first-round talent. I think that was pretty clear. I think it was just, like, as the night went on, it became clear that a lot of teams didn't see him as a sure bet compared to someone like Gabe Vilardi or Martin Natchez or, I don't know, Josh Norris, for instance, or Robert Thomas, who, I, you know, at 20, Robert Thomas of the Blues was chastised as, a very safe pick, as in, like, yeah, this guy is probably, like, a surefire third liner, but, like,
right,
why are you doing that if you can swing for a first liner? And, I mean, Robert Thomas has had a very good NHL career today, to this day, but, I mean, like, you know, the end of that first round was pretty interesting. Like, Morgan Frost at 27, like, I think he'll be a good NHL player. Shane Bowers is still working his way there. Clint Costin, you know, a lot of interesting players there. So, I don't know. I think it just became clear that everyone had their concerns about, you know, he's obviously either a home run pick or nothing. And, you know, at 30, you pretty much have the luxury of doing whatever you really
want. Whatever you want, so. Exactly. The expectations are a little bit low.
Yeah.
So, yeah. All right, so as you know, the last pick of the draft is actually the San Jose Sharks, which I believe is their they didn't have that. The only one they've got is at number 31 from Tampa, which again, I think most people thought that they got a good deal from Tampa with the Goodrow trade, which, you know, I guess, but. So yeah, and so I'm guessing they're gonna probably do best player available at that point.
They should.
And then we start to see, you know, it is go by record, and so Detroit will have the first pick in the second round. You'll see Ottawa making their fourth pick in the top 33, which, again, I don't know. I've heard a lot I've heard more rumors about them looking at, you know, what they might want to do with number six as far as even being open to trading, which I'm not sure. I don't know who would be, you know, really, if there's Nashville would even have any interest in it. I don't think so, but yeah. And then San Jose, L.A., Anaheim, and then we come to number 37. 37 was Nashville, and this is the draft pick they received from the New Jersey Devils, where we sent P.K. Subban and got back Jeremy Davies and deadweight Steven Santini and this pick. And so... yeah, this is a pretty good opportunity, I think, especially considering the teams that are ahead of them, for Nashville to kind of go, you know, they've got options with this pick, especially with the next pick coming five picks later. So, okay, I'm going to edit that out. All right. With their, you know, they've got their next pick coming just five picks later at number 42. So Eric, let's say, you know, I guess assuming they're probably going to draft, or assuming they draft a forward, what do you see them doing at 37? I'm saying drafting a forward at number 11. What do you see them doing at 37?
Yeah, I mean, I think they'll probably end up going forward here again. Like, you've got the luxury of having two picks so close to each other that you could probably flip-flop, but I think they're... is going to be a bigger run of forwards at this section of the draft than there will be defensemen. And I can also see a good number of defensemen dropping out of the first. Like, if those players forwards I mentioned earlier slide into the first, like Neighbors and Brisson and, you know, whomever, like, that's going to be pushing guys like Wallander and Niemela and Jeremy Poirier out of the first, right? So I imagine they'll end up going forward here. You know, I think some names that come to me as options. You know, a lot of people think Mishak's going to be available then. I really can't say for certain whether that'll be the case.
Right.
But if he's there, you know, I think that's a pick they make. You know, I'm hoping they stay away from someone like Sam Colangelo at that spot. I think if Thomas Bortolo is there, that's a pick they make. I think if Murat Kuznetsov is there, that's definitely a pick they make, although I don't think he will be. I think that he will probably not make it out of the first few picks of the second round. You know, some other forwards, I think they can probably still get a few picks later, so I wouldn't reach on any. Those are probably the ones I target at that point. But then if you've got guys like, you know, Lucas Reichel or, you know, I don't even like Maverick Bork, I guess, or even Gundler who slide out of the first, like, and they're there at 37, absolutely. It's really hard to tell. Like, some teams' draft boards this year are really all over the place. Mm-hmm. Like, I know a few teams have, like, Sam Colangelo as a surefire first rounder, which I think is questionable, but...
I was trying to find him on your list, and it's like, oh, he's third round.
Yeah. So it's really hard to like pinpoint, but you know, they're gonna have their choices here, and if they end up going D at this pick, I think they'll go forward at the next one anyway.
Right, and I think you made a good point about them maybe wanting to go forward with this one because defensemen may drop a little bit, and they have a much. I think you'll get a little bit more value going forward first, because probably the guy that they want on defense will probably still be there in five picks, I imagine.
I also think there's a group of defenders there who are all fairly similar in how they like to develop defenders. So I don't think, like, names I'm thinking of here at this point are probably Toby Nummela, you know, maybe Ryan O'Rourke, but I don't know if he gets out of the first round. Shakir Shakir Mukhamadulin, and Damon Hunt, are kind of the three that come off the page to me, maybe Brock Faber as well.
Right.
And all of those guys are, Yoni Yermo is another name too, actually. All those guys, I think they would be fine on nearly most of them, in terms of those being prospects they like, those being prospects they know they could develop well. Whereas like someone like maybe Jeremy Poirier or Lucas Cormier, I think they probably will stay away from.
Right.
But kind of hard to tell. So.
Okay. Yeah. And I think we'll get it's going to be really hard to kind of sit there and say, I think it'll be this player, but you know, just cause everything will change so much between 11 mm-hmm. and this, but yeah. Okay. So that's, you know, I think that's a good rundown of kind of what they're going to do at that spot. And so, after Nashville at that point, you've got Buffalo, Minnesota, Winnipeg, and Carolina. And then Nashville is up again. And, you know, like you said earlier, chances are they'll go two forwards and a defenseman in some order. Especially, I guess, if they take a defenseman at 11, then, you know, it's probably both forwards at this spot, I imagine. So,
yeah.
You know, five picks later, you know, is there anything – different, I think, you know, different players you would look at compared to what you just listed off? Because I imagine the reasoning will be that the same, you know, same group of guys.
Yeah, I mean, I think that bunch is pretty set. I mean, one guy that I'm really high on that I think they should take a swing at with their second pick, if he's there, which I think he will be, is Vasily Ponomariov. I think he's a really exceptional player. I think he's a near guarantee to be an NHLer. I think that he's the type of player they really value, and I think that would be good, a good play there. I can also see them going down the route of, like, if we joke about, like, you know, the American-born player and all that stuff, college-bound, like, this is the pick where I can very much see them going after someone like Ty Smolanich or Luke Tuck from the U.S. National Team Development Program. Mm-hmm. Probably, you know, partial to Smolanich there and just that he's a center. I think I maybe like Tuck better as ceiling-wise, but, you know, I think Smolanich probably fits their mold a bit better. So I think that may be where they go. I wouldn't rule them out going two forwards here, even if they go forward at 11, right? Like, if all the defenders left on the board are, like, Cormier and Hunt, and they're not high on either, or Cormier and Mukhamadulin, like, and Smolanich is there, or whomever, like, I could totally see them going three forwards, you know?
Right.
So, but I think this is probably an opportunity where, you know, if they go forward at the first pick, seems likely they'll target defensemen here if they don't trade any of these picks.
All right. And so I asked this about pick number 11. And again, I asked this as somebody who's still pretty ignorant to kind of the development process. Because again, for me learning, you know, what, 3 years ago, it's like, oh, you have the draft. And then like, oh, you don't see these players for like 3 or 4 years. That kind of was odd to me because I'm so used to, you know, how football does it. But, you know, these two picks in the top of the second round, how long do you see their development process going before you start to see them even just make some appearances, you know, with the Predators, maybe like 3 or 4 in each season? Are these three, four-year projects?
I mean, it's really hard to tell, right? Because, like, you have to take a couple factors into consideration, right? So if they're taking someone like Smolanich or Luke Tuck or, you know, Colangelo or whoever, then that's a player they know is going to college. So right. That is probably at a minimum, like,
3 years.
I mean, I wouldn't, you know, it depends on who it is, but I would say 2-3 years, sure. Maybe more. If you were taking someone like, you know, Kuznetsov, you know, that's a player who maybe stays in Russia a bit longer. If you're taking someone like, Ponomaryov or who?
I was going to say Emil Andre.
Yeah, I mean, even Emil Andre, like, you know, the thing that the pandemic has really, opened up the question on is if you are a prospect playing in Europe right now, you've all of a sudden got hopefully a full year of development this season that some guys playing juniors, I mean, like the QMJHL is back, but like the OHL and the WHL, like probably not for a couple months, you know, college, each conference is kind of doing it differently, it seems. Maybe, who knows? So, like, if you've got a guy like Helga Granz or whatever, like Toby Niemela, who's playing in Europe, like, I mean, I think those guys are already, like, more pro-ready just because of the style of play over there. But, like, all of a sudden, like, you're looking at, you know, a bit of an accelerated timeline in that, like,
right.
You take, for example, like, Yusuf Parsonen, who was their seventh-round pick last year, who, you know, all of a sudden is playing, a year later, is playing first-line minutes in the Finnish Liga, like, that's a guy who you could see in Nashville or Milwaukee in a season or two, right? Whereas, like, if you're taking someone coming out of juniors or the USHL, like, that's a bit of, delayed gratification.
That's the case you probably have with, is it Cormier?
Cormier.
Yeah, in the QMJHL. Like, that's probably 3-4 years minimum, I'm guessing, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think you can use, like, someone like Frederick Allard or Alexander Carey is a good example. Like, they've been pretty consistent in how they develop their QMJHL picks. So, like, after Allard was drafted, he only played one more season in the QMJHL. Granted, it was his fourth season in the QMJHL, but then he jumped in and scored 24 points in Milwaukee the next year. And then, like, someone like Alexander Carrier, and even, I mean, Sam Girard's a bit of a different story, but...
Yeah.
Alexander Carrier, like same situation. Like, this is a guy who they took in 2015, who played one more season in the Q, his fourth, and then jumped right into Milwaukee. So I don't think they'll go like the Lucas Cormier route, but for sake, if they did, someone who 1 weekend into the QMJHL season has already been playing phenomenally, has 5 points in 2 games. Like, this will be his third Q season, so. Wouldn't surprise me if it's, you know, he's got one more and then he would go to the AHL or what, but you do have to keep in mind the CHL-AHL agreement, so.
Right. For our listeners who aren't aware with that.
The agreement is many things, but the only rule that you really have to care about is a player who's drafted from Canadian juniors under the age of 20 cannot play in the AHL. So that's why, like, you have, like, Tomasino is a great example, right? If Philip Tomasino doesn't make Nashville's roster this year, he cannot play in Milwaukee because right. He's still under 20. So he would have to go back to Oshawa.
Right. And speaking of Tomasino, you know, are there guys in this, you know, Tomasino is 24th, so I think that there might be a little bit of a difference here, but are there guys in this range of this, you know, maybe 28 to win national picks that you could see being a guy that the next season puts up really great numbers and Nashville, you know, thinks that he could be ready to come up? I mean, is there anybody kind of available at that point in this late first, early second area that you could see, you know, making a jump pretty quickly?
I mean, it's hard to say, right? Like, I think maybe the eyes are probably going to be on someone like Jacob Perot or Maverick Bork to carry that. I think a lot of people are hoping that that person is Tyson Forster, who, you know, you're talking about a player whose, like, shooting talent has been compared to someone like Steven Stamkos back in, you know, when he scored 60 goals. Like, this right. is a player who has a lot of, like, mechanical pitfalls in his game, but also scored 80 points last year in 62 games for Barry, including 36 right. goals. And, I mean, he'll undoubtedly hit 40 goals. I mean, shortened season, who knows. But in a full season, he'd undoubtedly hit 40 to 45, if not more, goals this year. So, you know, I think that's probably someone whose people have their eyes on. Maybe Jan Mišek, too, would be another option there.
Yeah, again, in my little bit of OHL watching last season, he was one of those guys I like a whole lot. And so one thing I wanted to ask you with about these two picks is about a couple players. One, because, again, this is you could say, you know, it's kind of a little bit of a joke at this point, but it's also entirely within the realm of possibility, is Thomas Borlaug, if he's available. I don't see him going past Nashville. So what can you tell us a little bit about him? And obviously, you know, he's got the connection to Nashville. How do you think about him?
Yeah, I think Thomas Borlaug is a good player. I mean, you know, he was a standout on a U.S. national team that was significantly less talented than last year's class. You know, outside of Sanderson, he is definitely their top prospect. He's a really good shooter. He is someone who can get the puck off when moving with pace. He's got good ability to, you know, he doesn't commit to a single shot option off the rush and call it a day, even if the goalie, you know, covers that hole or a defenseman makes a good adjustment. He can react quickly and kind of make those adjustments as needed. Really good passer. I think he's got really good vision in the offensive zone. Mm-hmm. Able to pull the puck through a lot of obstacles. I think for him, it's just about, you know, like, attacking the inside with more consistency, a bit more speed in transition, and just developing that game. I mean, he's going to a Michigan program next year, which is going to be really good. Really, really good. And, like, this is a team that could have – Michigan's a team that has a lot of – has already a lot of great prospects, is getting a ton more commitments, and is going to have two potential top 10 picks in next year's draft on their team this year. So, you know, it'll be a great opportunity for him to shine. I think he's built to play – he's built to be a very good college hockey player. But I can also see him taking, you know, 2, maybe 3 years in college to really bulk up and get to a professional kind of pace.
Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. Well, again, because that's a name that we're probably going to hear a little bit as it gets towards Nashville's pick. And so, yeah, I wanted to throw that in there just to kind of get an idea. And the other person I wanted to ask you about, and again, this is somebody that you don't have ranked really very high, you know, compared to where Nashville is picking, is, you know, Afanasyev's teammate in Windsor. Is it Foodie or Foudy? Which one is it?
Foodie,
so Jean-Luc Foodie. I like him a lot. I like his skating a whole lot. I know a lot of people, you know, they have some issues with kind of just his overall game, but what do you think about him, and do you think that he should even be an option for Nashville at one of those two picks?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it would hurt. I just think there's probably going to be higher ceiling on the board there. Foodie, I mean, he's really intriguing in that he's a really excellent skater. He's one of the best skaters in this class, undoubtedly. And he's just got great control of his edges, both inside and out. You know, just really good power in his hips, really good leg strength. His skating mechanics are excellent. He just moves with such great pace. But, he plays the game like Matt Barzell, except not as good. and that he's just constantly, I mean, like, he could skate 60 minutes around the offensive zone and never lose the puck and never get tired and also never get a scoring chance. Right. And it's just like at a certain point, some NHL development staff is going to be like, all right, like, you have to attack the middle. Like, you have to attack the inside. You have to get these higher danger areas. You have to get scoring chances on net, right? Like, I don't think that's going to be a consistent problem moving forward, but it's also something we haven't seen him tested at this level so far. So, right. You know, my concern is, like, if you've got a higher ceiling player on the board versus this player who, you know, we know his skill level and it's very good, but, like, he either can't or won't make the plays he would need to at the NHL level, at the OHL level, then, like, what's going on there, right? And, like,
yeah.
I love Matt Barzell. And to be clear, John Lucudi is not as good as Matt Barzell was. Like, Matt Barzell was a legitimate, like, star-level player, right? And I love Matt Barzell. I think he is a great player. I think you could have watched any game of the Eastern Conference Final this year. Like, that last game, like, he mm-hmm. when they were on that power play, he tried the end of the zone three different times. And it didn't work all three times and just lost the play, right? And it's like those are the habits that you can't have someone carry over to a higher level.
Yeah.
Except for Barzell, it's kind of like, oh, he does this every now and then, and it's like a thing, right? With John Lucudi, it's every single shift. Like, this is all he knows, right?
Yeah.
And it's just like at a certain point, like, you've just got to change course here. So, you know, if they take him, I don't think it would be a terrible option. But I think there will be higher ceiling on the board at that pick.
Yeah, and I mean, just as, again, if you're like me and you've only seen him or know about him because you were following a little bit of Afanasyev did last season, so I completely forgot that Afanasyev led the Spitfires in goals last year and points, I think.
Points,
right?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, 67. He's 31 and 36, which is pretty awesome. And, of course, the most important stat, he was a plus 14 in his first month. But I think, you know, one of the good things about Foodie being drafted would be that we have a little bit of inside access with the Windsor folks. But, it's really interesting. As somebody, again, I tend to have, like, oh, I like this guy. It's because, oh, I watched five games with him. So, yeah, that's the guy I like. But, So that's, you know, we've talked about a little bit what the options are with Nashville at those two picks. And again, you said that it's not outside the realm of possibility that Nashville goes even three forwards. But more likely, if they do go defender, it'd probably just be one and then two forwards. You know, I think NHL.com, I just looked up and they're talking about every team in the Central's needs. And they said that Nashville's most pressing need was defenseman depth, which I don't know that I entirely agree with that, but, you know, I don't know that.
Here's my take on the matter. We should ban all articles saying here's what this team's needs are ahead of the draft.
Yeah.
Because every team's needs are all of them.
Right, yeah. But to not even mention the fact that, you know, two top six forwards are gone, you know, it's just odd to me, really, that was the angle they went with. So, yeah, no, I guess my last question for this is, you know, if we survive the scare at pick number 11 with Askarov, there's no goalies in this range that people start looking at, right?
Yeah, I don't think another goalie's probably going to come off the board until round three. So I think second round is safe.
Yeah, you've got the kid from Guelph.
There's potentially three or four goalies that could come off the board in round three, though.
Right.
Which is a lot, so.
Yeah, and again, with the Askarov thing, you know, I messed with you for a long time about you should do your preview, and we're going to apparently get a something about why Nashville should draft Askarov, despite our objections.
Apparently.
But, you know, again, it's hard for me to sit there and say why, like, you know, this is a goalie that you should definitely take, because it just, you know, goaltenders are just such an enigma. You know, you can take a guy in the first or you can take a guy in the seventh, and, you know, yeah, there's going to be a little bit more chance that the guy in the first turns out pretty good, but I don't know, it just seems like such a hard position to project that why would you, if you really need a goaltender, why not take one a little bit later? I just don't understand that pick, especially with Ingram. I know that there's not a lot of depth past that, but I mean, you've got your guy to back up Sorrow, so I'm not quite sure, you know, really what the real logic is besides maybe getting clicks on that. So
yeah, I mean, I think the justification there is like, if they get there and literally every guy on their board is gone, like, you know, Jarvis, Quinn, whoever, and Ashcroft is there and he's clearly BPA, like, do it, obviously, you know? Like, you shouldn't reach for, like, you know, I don't know, Hendricks, LaPierre, Maverick, Bork, just because you need a forward, right? Because, right. Like, Ashcroft could legitimately be, like, a franchise goalie, but I don't think that would be the case, so.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's, like I said, LaPierre was one. Isn't he? He's one of the guys that we've heard a little bit of chatter about with Nashville.
Yeah.
Which is,
yep,
a little bit worrying. Yeah. Okay, cool. So, you know, that'll cover Nashville's first three picks. And so, again, you know, we've talked about the options and where, you know, the directions that you think that Nashville should go. You know, what overall, so, you know, they make these picks. Let's just say that, you know, whatever combination of players they do, you know, what are the expectations that you want to see out of these first three picks? You know, again, you have three picks in the top 45. You know, what is it that you think Nashville should, you know, how they should feel coming out of this? You know, are you coming out with a couple of guys that can be helpful in two or three years? I mean, what's the goal, I guess, really, just from a high-level perspective?
Yeah, I mean, I think the goal is pretty similar to what it was. Well, I don't know if this was the goal last year, but what ended up being the result last year in that, like, you know, in three picks, all of which were lower down the board than the three picks they have this year, they got a legitimate, almost very probable top six NHL player. Mm-hmm. They got a
middle six,
potential top six to middle six NHL player, and a player who is going to take a bit longer to get there, but I'm pretty sure will be an NHLer, which, like, data shows, like, there's only, like, 60-something guys that come out of every draft that are actual NHLers. And so anything beyond, like,
who's the third one you're talking about?
Alexander Campbell.
Oh, Campbell, okay.
So if you're anywhere past 60 and you're getting, like, legitimate NHL talent, I think it's a steal. So I think the strategy should be the same. I see no reason why you shouldn't come out of these three picks with three legitimate, like, guys that you can, that evaluators that we can look at and say, that's someone who, the only way he's not making the NHL is if something goes sideways, you know? And obviously it's hard to know for sure, right? But, like, this isn't somewhere where they should be, like, taking someone like Tyler Cleven or, you know, I don't know, like, even, like, my biggest fear would probably be Will Cooley, but, like...
Why is that? I was going to ask you about that.
It's just he's a very one-dimensional player. He suffers from... He's got a really great shot, which is wonderful, but, like, if you can't get open, if you can't move in transition, if you can't adjust to closing shooting lanes, if you can't look, you know, anywhere outside of your normal cone of vision when you have the puck on your stick, then what does a good shot even do for you?
Right.
So, like, yeah, against junior players, he can fire a snapshot from the top of the circles and score 9 times out of 10, but he won't be able to do that at the NHL. And I just don't see enough in the rest of his game that he can, like, suddenly flip a switch and it's good all of a sudden that he'll be an impact player at the next level. I also think it's very concerning that he basically equaled his scoring output year over year.
Right.
And he's not a younger player in this class at all.
It's interesting. He's a guy that, again, I couldn't tell you the finer points of these guys' games or anything like that, but he seemed like a guy that should have had higher expectations last season and didn't really meet them.
I think that's fair. I mean, I think it's also the curse of the Hellinger-Gretzky tournament, which is basically anyone who is on Canada's roster for the Hellinger-Gretzky tournament, people are like, oh, he's probably a first-round pick, when in reality that is never the case.
Yeah. All right. So before we move on, I'm going to ask you another couple questions. So, like number 11, Nashville has picked twice at 37. once in 2003 and once in 2012. Would you venture a guess, without looking, who either one of those players was? A defenseman and a forward.
Was the forward in 2012?
Yes.
I feel like I know who it is, but I'm afraid to guess.
It was somebody that I liked a whole lot, but...
That was the Sissons draft, but I don't think it was Sissons' pick, right?
No,
was it Pontus Auberg?
It was Auberg, yes.
Wow. And then the other was 2003?
Yeah.
Defenseman. I have no idea.
The OJHL. It was
Kevin Klein?
Yeah. But interesting, you talk about 37, because back in 2008, there was a pick at number 38, which was some fellow from out of SC Bern in Switzerland. By the name of Roman Josi, but I don't think there's going to be a Roman Josi type player at that point. So, you know, how did he project coming out? Just real quick, we won't dwell on that.
Yeah, I mean, I think, again, when you're in the second round there, like, you're going to start taking guys that even, you know, 2008 doesn't seem like that long ago, but, like, even then, like, teams weren't expending a ton of scouting in abnormal places. So, you know, there's a good chance that, like, I would almost venture to say, almost venture to guarantee that not all 30 teams scouted Roman Josi that year.
Yeah.
Which seems like a mat. You'd be like, how? Like, how could they not that not happen, right? But, like, again, like, non-traditional area, like, teams have limited budgets. Like, they're only going to send scouts to places they really know, right?
Right.
And so it's really hard to say in that case, but... Yeah.
I'm super bummed that the game in Switzerland, that I guess either should have already happened or would have been...
Yeah, it would have happened already. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there was a real chance I could have gotten to go to that game just for the fact that I talked to their GM, and she's very nice, and she had made some initial plans to see what she could do. So, pretty bummed about that. Okay, and then... Nashville had three picks at 42, one in 2001, which was Thomas Slovak from Slovakia, ironically. The second was in 2009, which was Charles Olivier Roussel. Don't know much about him. But in 2014, they had somebody who played a big part in a recent trade. Who do you think that was, a forward?
Kamenev.
Yeah. Which is he's not over here anymore, right? He's over in...
Yeah, he went back to Russia.
That's what I thought. Yeah. So, yeah, so that's kind of what Nashville has done at those positions. 45 was Afanasyev last year. 47 was Sammy Girard. 49, they took Shea Weber. And at 50, they took Colton Sissons. So there's guys in the top 50 out there. You know, it just depends if you get lucky, you know, for every Shea Weber at 49, you also have an Austin Watson at 18. So, yeah, that's a little bit of history on that. So after this, it's really hard to sit there and try to project, like, okay, who are going to be the guys in the third round? But, you know, the third round, again, Nashville has two picks. Once again, they've got 70 and 73. 70 comes from, I believe, the Fiala trade? From Minnesota?
No. I think that was a draft day trade they did last year.
Oh, that's right. Because I think that was that when we were hoping they'd take Kaliev, and then they traded back or something?
Yeah. Yes, I believe so.
Okay. And I know that you have I think it's out, right? Your third overall draft board?
Correct.
It's our third round draft board?
Correct.
Yeah, and so looking at some of the... again, I talked about Nico Dawes, a goaltender, which at this point, when you've got 70 and 73, I'm perfectly okay with going after that.
Yeah, I mean, they typically invest in goalies in later rounds, but I think they should definitely go with one here. And Dawes isn't even the goaltender I like the most, which would be Joel Blomqvist, but I think Dawes is closer to being pro-ready, and I think that's something they should prioritize.
Right. Yeah, that's right. I missed Blomqvist. That's right. And then another one, which is interesting to me, is Zion Nybeck, which for some reason I feel like he had a higher, you know, higher rating, I guess, maybe going into the last season. And it seems, I don't know, I might be wrong. I might be thinking of somebody else, but it seems kind of, I don't know, is he somebody that was projected before the year started to be right around this area, a third rounder.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on there. That's a really hard situation to read. So nearly everybody I've talked to is much higher on him than round three. Mm-hmm. But Bob McKenzie's draft board, which is notoriously the closest to real life because of his access to all that. Because he knows. He has him at 73, which is pretty shocking to me. And I think Promin's latest had him in the 90s. So I really don't know what's up there. It can't only be a size thing. I really don't get it. I mean, he's a player.
25. That's right, yeah.
Yeah, he's a player. If he's available at one of those two picks, they should absolutely take him.
Yeah. May remind viewers of Victor Arvidsson, but he's more of a pure shooter. Yeah. Yeah, that's definitely a good way to describe
it. On that note, he won't come into the zone, take five strides, and wind up for a slap shot from the far edge of the top of the circle.
Yeah.
Arvidsson does every single time.
Yeah, because that's, you know, Arvidsson does that, or they use him to screen the goalie, which is, you know, an interesting thing, a strategy to take, but apparently it worked for a couple years, so, you know, what do I know? There was Zybek there you've got as an option. Is there anybody else, I think, that you had on your draft board, which, again, you can find this set on the forecheck. I believe it was published a couple days ago for the draft board.
Yeah, I mean, there's three other guys there that I would really take a look at who are and two of them I'm really high on. Actually, really all three of them I'm high on. But the first one is Demo Nickel, who's a defender for Drummondville in the QMJHL. I think he's I'm really high on him. I think he's a really great player, really solid prospect. And I think this is someone whose ceiling is probably as like a bottom pair defender in the NHL. Mm-hmm. But as like a, you know, people, especially this offseason, right, are like salivating over like Dylan DeMello and like players like that on your bottom pair, right? Like, I think this is a guy whose name is going to be in that conversation in a few years down the line. And like this organization's got to get away from it filling those holes with, like, you know, a rotating cast of below replacement level players. And he's someone who I think is like a legitimate like bottom pair mainstay, and just plays the game in such an intelligent way. So I know that's not like a sexy pick. Like, you're not like hoping he turns into like a top pairing guy, but like that's like a long term investment. And if you can swing that in the third round, again, bear in mind, really only like 60 real NHLers a class, I think that's a great value there.
Right. You said there's a couple other guys you like quite a bit there. Around the
yeah. Team. So another one is Martin Kromiak, who, again, I'm very high on, but I'm hearing a lot of third-round whispers with his name. Came over from Slovakia halfway through the year to Kingston, scored 33 points in his last 28 games there. He had the sixth highest even strength primary points per game rate of OHL forwards last season, behind Byfield, Rossi, Perfetti, Quinn, and Tyler Tulio. He's one of the youngest players in the class. Just tons of skill with the puck, really creative. I think that there are some pitfalls there. I think he kind of thinks the game a little faster than he plays it at time, but I think those are correctable issues. I don't think it's anything that's, you know, should severely scare a team off. And like, again, if you're getting someone who could potentially score 20 goals a year in the NHL in the third round, by all means. You know, I think the one big flag is that he was playing with Shane Wright, who will very likely be the first overall pick in 2022, who is, you know, in the same conversation as Connor McDavid was at his age. And so people are saying, oh, well, how much of an effect did that have on him? But, you know, there's only so much diligence you can do on that question, and then you have to take a risk. So why not?
Yeah. And so, again, I think there's not a ton of comparable. I mean, well, let me put it this way. So historically, Nashville has had the number 70 pick once in 2009 with Taylor Beck. So he had 92 games in the NHL. I'm not sure how many of those were with Nashville, if any. And then 66, which is, I guess, kind of in a similar range, was Jimmy Vesey, which, you know, hey, he's had an NHL career, just not with Nashville. They didn't have any at 73, but most recently in another 2009, they had Michael Latta at 72. So guys that we know now, I think 76, you have Rem Pitlick. 78 is the mysterious Frederick Allard. I say just mysterious because I don't know. Nashville's picked at number 79, somebody who has taught my daughter hockey, which is Cody Franson. And then you get, I think, another pick that people might know is there's Thomas Novak at 85, and then they took Ferentz at 92. So, okay, so after the third round, you know, again, it's two rounds with Nashville has two picks, so they've got to be really happy about having five picks in the top three rounds. But they've got nothing in the fourth this year.
Mm-hmm.
And then they've got, one pick in the fifth, I believe?
Yep.
Yeah, and again, you already have a story up talking about the draft board. We don't have to get really deep into it, but actually, let's do it this way. So they've got a couple picks left at this point. You know, what are the guys at that point where you just kind of take a swing on a guy that's going to be a project and hope that you get somebody who's, you know, who will pleasantly surprise you, like Parson in last year.
Yeah, I mean, it's not even almost like a project thing because I don't think Parson is that much of a prospect. I think it's just an oversight, really. Like, it's just teams not doing their diligence, right? And, like, you know, I don't think it was really hard to project that Parson would be playing at the level he is now, but, you know, I guess some teams just didn't like his game, which is fine. I mean, a couple guys that come to mind, Leo Loof, who's a defender from Sweden, another interesting player, not particularly stand out on defense, but or on offense, but I think he's really solid defensively. I think he's a pretty good skater. I think as he gets older, his decision-making pace will probably improve, and that will be good. Anton Johansson is another defenseman who comes to mind, out a lot of the year with injury, but really impressed when he was in the lineup. Fantastic skater, great transition player, good vision up ice, moves with his head up. I think he's a really intriguing prospect. Hard to tell where he's going to go just because of the injuries, but I think if he's there in round three, they should take him. A couple other guys that come to mind. Who else?
You got a big fella listed from the USHL.
Oh, yes. Carson Bantle. Really? Carson Bantle, very interesting player. It's really hard to tell what teams are thinking about him this year. So for context, he played for Madison in the USHL last year,
right,
who was the worst team in the league by a lot. They were very bad. But he led the team in scoring.
Point per game player.
Yeah, and that was including after they traded away their second best player at the trade deadline. So, mm-hmm. You know, he is a project, but he's also 6'4", if not taller.
Yeah.
His skating is okay, it's not fantastic, and there's some mechanical things that need to be fixed there. He's not the most graceful player with the puck, I guess, but he also has very consistent, impenetrable layers of possession protection when he has the puck on his stick. I mean, this is really a player that's hard to get off the puck. So,
big decent boy.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it doesn't hurt. Again, he's going to college. He's committed to Michigan Tech, so it's going to be a few years anyway, but an option there. Another guy that I projected for maybe a six-round option that I'm very high on is Petteri Puhakka, who is an overager, actually. This is his second year of eligibility, mm-hmm. Which typically comes with a flag. You know, people get really high on overagers because, like, Pavel Gogolev, for example, plays for Guelph in the OHL, like, scored, like, 94 points this year, and people are like, 94 points, like, you gotta take him. But he's also, like, 20, so, you know, that's why he scored 94 points. 96 points, excuse me. But Puhak is a bit of a different story. He's not so much an overager because he couldn't really crack the U20 lineup last year. Carpat, which is the organization that Pecorino came from, is just like a really good development team, and their pipeline is just always stock full of players.
Right.
So it's pretty hard to get consistent ice timer there, but he has moved on to a different organization in Tapara. He's playing in the Finnish league this year. was a point per game player last year at the U20 level, mm-hmm. over a point per game player at the U18. And bear in mind, point per game player at the U20 level as a 18-year-old, not right. as a 20-year-old or anything like that. Mm-hmm. Well over a point per game at the U18 level the year before. Smaller player, very, very quick. Not the best skater, but not a terrible skater. Good shot.
He did pretty well at juniors, too.
Yeah, he got some minutes with the U20 team. Really good shooter. Really just tenacious on the puck. I think this is a guy that, like, again, like, you should be looking at these junior levels worldwide in these later rounds and saying, like, okay, who are guys who were overperforming, right? And mm-hmm. then figure out whether that overperformance was an anomaly or not. And if you think it wasn't, then there's no reason you shouldn't be taking swings on these guys.
Yeah, definitely. All right, so again, just because I've done it with the other two rounds, so in the fifth round, they've got pick 135. So at pick 135, they've never done anything with that. They had Gabby Bork at 132. Spencer Statsny a couple years ago, it's at 131. But then after that, like, around that area, not really a ton of players historically that Nashville's come out with. And then I think in round six, I believe they are, what's the pick number? I figured you would know this off the top of your head. 166.
Mm-hmm.
So 166 historically, Jeff Foss.
Oh, RBI legend.
Yeah, I don't know anything about him, so... there was around that area other players that people might be familiar with. There was Emil Pettersson in 2013 at 155. There was Mike McKenna at 172. And Anthony Potetto at 168. My eyes just, like, reflexively glazed right over him. There's stuff to be had. I mean, really... You know, you get it's really kind of a grab back at this point, and it's a matter of, again, like you said, do you have scouts out there working these areas? And you may have guys that surprise you. You know, this is, you can get people in the sixth and seventh rounds that will end up, you know, being people that contribute at the NHL level, even if it's something like Anders Lindbäck, you know. Just being like an eternal backup wherever you get went, you know, 130 games in the seventh round. You've got Hornqvist at 230th. and you know, and again, of course, you've got Pekka in the eighth round that doesn't even exist anymore. I think at this point, this is where we're going to rely on you to tell us about some of these players that they pick late on day two. Really kind of going, like, looking over this, you know, Nashville is, they're in a good position with pick at number 11 to really get somebody who can make an impact within a few years. And then still a really good position. If a couple of good things came out of that Subban trade, besides the fact that his play went downhill last year, was, you know, a guy like Jeremy Davies that came over and having that second round pick from New Jersey. So, I mean, I think, you know, if you're a Nashville fan, you should be able to walk away from this draft feeling pretty good. I mean, I really think so. And maybe not immediately. You're not going to get that guy who's going to play in the NHL next year or anything like that. But, you know, I think these are guys they don't have depth at this, you know, these type of skill levels, I think, at this point, a ton of it. So I think this will be a really good year. And if it was up to me, I'd like to see this type of a draft again next year of top 15 pick and really kind of get things moving in the right direction as far as development goes. We will be right back. We've got a few more things that Eric and I will go over, but we're going to go ahead and throw to the ads. And so, we're going to let you listen to those, and then we'll be right back.
It's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Happy Price, Priceline.
All right, and we're back. So we've gone over what Nashville, you know, some of the options and some of the things they're going to do in next week's draft. We are actually, at the time of recording, about 43 hours away from the first round of the draft. And so it's coming. It's all this prep that Eric and Eamon have done. It's all going to come to a conclusion here in just a couple of days. But, you know, we wanted to maybe close this out by taking a look back and seeing what happened last year with a draft that honestly kind of, you know, turned out a whole lot better than expected. So I'm going to yield the floor to you, Eric. And I guess everybody's talked at length about this guy, but we can start with the first round pick last year at number 24, which was Philip Tomasino, which, again, I think he was the guy that you picked in the SB Nation draft, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And so, again, maybe the trend will continue with Mercer. But, you know, what kind of season did he have last year, Eric?
Yeah, I mean, fantastic season from Tomasino. Pretty much everything they hoped for. Hit 100 points, top five scorer in the OHL. Right on pace with Connor McMichael of the London Knights, who was taken the next pick later by the Capitals. I mean, all signs point to him being a top-line player in the NHL. Should get that chance starting this season whenever that happens. You know, nothing very bad at all to say about his 2019-20 year.
Yeah, I mean, again, and to put it in perspective, like, I watched some Niagara games, and whew, that was a rough game to watch, and he still played pretty well. And again, I know that a lot of the Windsor folks have been pretty adamant at me about saying they're not gonna play him in Nashville next year. They're not gonna, you know, he's gonna be in Oshawa all year. I don't know what you're talking about, which I feel bad because I can understand because they're psyched about him being there next year. But again, you know, from what we heard from somebody within the organization that they almost kept him this year. So I don't think it's that far out of the realm of possibility, especially considering you're going to have to now play guys. You lose Granlund, you lose Smith, which are two, you know, I guess maybe last year you would technically call them both top six players, but they were top six players. You know, where do you think if when Tomasino is in Nashville, where are you putting him and who are you putting him with?
I mean, they're probably going to end up playing him on the wing.
Yeah,
I imagine.
Like with alongside like Duchesne, or
I mean, it's hard to say, right? Like, you know, let's say Tarras isn't gone. Are they playing Tarras at wing? Or are they playing Tarras at center? Let's say Duchesne and Johansson both stay, which like seems to be the course of action here, but you know, right, all the speculation lately, you know, I think alongside either of those two really is fine. Like, he's a utility, like he can play alongside anyone, you know. I guess Duchesne probably makes sense in that he provides Duchesne with a little more pace to the game and, you know, has that playmaking ability, but you know, I think we should pump the brakes a little bit in that, like, this isn't, you know, I hope this goes without saying, but this is not somebody who, like, we should expect him to show up night one and
throw
up 5 points. Like, there's going to be growing pains along the way, and you know, a 30-point season should not be considered bad by any stretch.
Oh no, I'd be overjoyed with that.
Yeah, so I think just a word to the wise there.
Definitely, and you know, again, like, I mean, I don't know. Again, you know more about this than I do, but I mean, I probably would have liked to see him in Oshawa one more year before doing this move, but, you know, they seem
he's too good for the OHL, so.
Well, yeah, but you said he couldn't play in the AHL next year, right?
Yeah, so it's really like, okay, I'm fine with it because it's like, at the very least, you're getting him adjusted to, like, the lifestyle, you know?
Right.
But, yeah, I mean, it was, like, the same thing. This is the same debate that people had with Mitch Marner back in the day, which was, do they send him back to London where he was clearly too good for the OHL, or throw him to the fire in Toronto? And, you know, I think either way it turns out fine. But, like, he also scored 116 points that last year in London and then
hit 61 points the next year in Toronto. You know, I don't think Thomas Hedo is going to be scoring 60 points next year, but...
Yeah, I mean, you're rare comparing Marner. So,
yeah, also, yeah.
Yeah. All right, so yeah, that's Thomas Hedo. And again, you're going to... I just don't see him... You know, they're going to have him in Nashville most likely, but I also don't see him as that, okay, this is a rookie, so we're going to stick him on line four or the third line. Like, I don't see them doing that with him. So, that's somebody that we're going to keep an eye on and see what happens with that. The next pick that Nashville had, and I believe this is after they traded back. I think they traded back their second-round pick. Is that right?
Correct.
Yeah, so to Minnesota, and they went back to three spots to number 45. And that's where they picked up Preds Twitter favorite Igor Afanasyev out of Muskegon in the USHL. And so... You know, tell us about him and how he played last year.
Yeah, I mean, anytime you can have two players in the OHL in their draft plus 1 year who lead their team in scoring, you know, it's a very envious position to be in for any organization. So
right.
Not 100 points, you know, 67, I think, but still very good for a first-year OHL player and a second-round pick at that. I think I'll... to have another kick at the can here in Windsor this season, and I would expect to see him in Milwaukee the season after.
Awesome. All right, so that was it for the second round, and then Nashville then had pick number 65 in round three with Alexander Campbell out of the BCHL at Victoria.
Yeah, Campbell's a player I really like. He was in Omaha in the USHL this past season, led them in scoring, and he'll be headed, or he is already at Clarkson University. We have a bit of clarity on the ECAC, which is the conference Clarkson plays in, a bit more than the other conferences. There's been some reports that they had decided on a season starting in January, playing 20 in-conference games, and teams could decide on their own if they want to play out of conference. It would be, the league would be split into two divisions, the New York-based teams versus the non-New York teams, and they would focus on that division. The one thing that throws a wrench into things with the ECAC is it's the conference that has the Ivy League schools in it, and the Ivy League has suspended all sports until after January 1st. So there's almost no guarantee the ECAC is, or there is almost a guarantee the ECAC won't be coming back until the new year, and then you're going to end up seeing some sort of truncated season. So, I mean, this is obviously a player that they would like to be playing as much as possible, but it isn't someone who, you know, like there's been a lot of clamoring at like, oh, like they should be sending guys to Europe and loaning them out there as some teams are doing, but like this is also a player who's like getting a degree.
Right.
You know, or making progress on it. So, like, that is a more personal decision. So, he'll be fine. I think they've got a player there. I think he's somebody who could be an impactful skater at the NHL level, but I think he'll be probably a three-year college player and then, you know, maybe some time in the AHL too.
Right, definitely. So, yeah, and it's, again, from all accounts, it seems like things went pretty well. With that, so let's.
And one quick note to add on him, people, if you remember, so he played on a line with Alex Newhook in the BCHL in his draft year, and a lot of the concerns coming out were, okay, how much of Alex Campbell's draft season was playing alongside Alex Newhook, and I would say we could probably all agree that last year he put those concerns largely to rest.
Yeah, definitely. All right, yeah, now. I'm looking to see where you had these guys ranked so I could, you know, talk about, you know, where, you know, the listeners could compare kind of. So, again, Thomas Hedo was picked at 24. You had him ranked at 18th. So I think that was, you know, again, good call on your part.
Good value.
Yeah. Looking at your second-round grades, let's see here. You had... do you remember where you... Were you? Oh, you have Afanasyev at 34, which is about, yeah, that's nine picks ahead. So that's again pretty good. And again, I say this all the time for those of you listening. Eric is very good at what he does. You know, nobody can really always like 100% batting average in any kind of drafting, no matter what sport it is. But you know, even as a stats guy like me, you can't really beat watching a ton of players, and that's what Eric does. And so, you know, we're really lucky to have him in on the forecheck. And so make sure you are checking out his work all through the year, because he's covering guys all year. He doesn't really stop looking at prospects. And so, yeah. So moving along, we have in the two fourth round picks. There is, the first one is a defenseman. They're actually both defensemen, but this one's from Mark Delgado.
Yeah, I think another player who they've got some value in here. So his draft year, he was Cale Makar's partner at UMass. His draft year, and then Cale Makar obviously went to Colorado. This past season, he you know, a tough year. He was dealing with really three separate injuries that kept him out of the lineup for most of the first half of the season. So counting stats don't look great, but he really got back into form quickly and you know, had a productive end of the season. I think this is someone who should be challenging for a Hobie Baker Award, maybe not this season, but the season after. Uh-huh. And I mean, similar to Ferentz, like very offensive-minded defenseman, loves to join the rush. I think he's a bit better defensively, but you know, another guy I think at the very least could turn into a depth option for them moving forward.
Yeah, and then the other fourth round pick, another defenseman, a guy that you had ranked 71st on your draft board, but was picked at 117, which is a synonym. Just say his last name for me.
Shestiakov.
So yeah, tell me about him.
Yeah, I'm very high on Semyon Shestiakov. I think he might end up being their biggest value from this draft class. And I know I'm sounding repetitive, but I think they had a very good draft last year. He is great. He's a small package. He's under 6 foot. Was playing in the MHL last year, which is the Russian Junior League. Had a mid-season trade, had an injury he was dealing with. So wasn't on the ice a ton, but was fantastic at every stretch of the way. And now he is playing full time in the KHL this year, at 19. And not just like third pairing 5 minutes a night. And so I should also add, in the KHL, a team can draft 7 defensemen, like, and not subtract a forward. Like, you can dress 19 skaters. So, like, I think his first 2 games, he was in the 7th defenseman. But, like, his past, and he's played 14 games now. His past, he's playing second pair minutes mostly with Oliver Kasky. But we're talking, you know, 18, 19, 20 minutes a night. So, at his age in the KHL, very impressive.
All right. That's good. And, then, again, it was representing pretty good value on that. So, all right. So, we go into the fifth round and beyond. The fifth round pick was Ethan Hyder, goaltender. And so how did he do last season?
Yeah, so he was also in the USHL last year. Struggled, but was on a bad Sioux City team. So not totally his fault. He'll also be going to Clarkson this year with Campbell. And I think we'll probably be a 3 or 4 year college player. Bit of a project. I don't think this is someone maybe like Thomas Vomashka where they're projecting he can be, you know, AHL starter and beyond. But, you know, if he turns into something, then that's good.
Gotcha. All right. So then we have Isaac Walther, forward.
Yes.
The Swedish Junior League.
Yes, good old Isak. He is an interesting player, someone I did not have on my radar at all, had never watched him play before they drafted him. He had a pretty disappointing year last year at the U20 level in Sweden, but was also playing on a Södertalje team, which was historically bad. I think they had one of the worst seasons at the U20 level in Swedish history. like a minus like 138 goal differential or something wild. It was like really bad. So not totally surprising, but you know, in my viewings of him, there were many where he was just taking shifts off, wasn't very engaged, just wasn't being the impact player that I think his size allows for him to be. He's not a phenomenal skater, but he's got a good frame, he's got a really good shot, and he's a very underrated playmaker too. But this year, his team's looking better. He's still at that U20 level, so, you know, a bit behind the curve with some of his peers, but like he's also a 6th-round pick, so that makes sense. And in 10 games so far, he's got 8 points, 4 of them primary even strength, 27 shots on net. He's a 19.46% goal score rate relative to his teammates. Looking pretty good. So,
yeah. And
so
again,
looking a lot better than he was last year, at least.
For those of you listening, those numbers he just listed off, those aren't really numbers that you find somewhere on a website to pull off. Like, that's hand tracked. So again, it really is amazing with what Eric does. And was he the player, or was it the next player that Nashville? Who was it that Nashville that picked somebody and nobody knew who he was? Like, they didn't have
him.
Was it him? Yeah. Okay. And then the last pick of the draft last year at 210th overall was Yusuf Parsonen.
Yes. I love Yusuf Parsonen.
I know you do.
I'm a huge fan. Yeah, he's awesome. So 7th-round pick, was playing mostly at the U20 level in Finland last year, graduated to the Liga, which is the professional league, towards the end of the year. Impressed. I think he, you know, probably exceeded expectations in that role. He was playing a lot of minutes alongside Lauri Paajanniemi, who's a Rangers prospect, but had 12 points in 31 games at the Liga level last year, again, as an 18-year-old. 18/19. He is back at the Liga level this year full-time. He's only played 2 games so far. The Finnish season just started. He's got 1 point. I think there's still going to be a learning curve with him. Again, 19-year-old playing in a professional men's league. But he has been centering their top line the last 2 games and is also an assistant captain this year. So, you know, I'm not very much one for intangibles or, maturity or whatever, but I think it's at least notable when a 19-year-old is wearing a letter at that level. So just something to take stock of.
Yeah, and I saw that you, after the draft, you gave him that pick an A. You were ecstatic about it from the beginning. You had him as a 5th-round guy. So,
yeah, I cannot believe he fell to 210, but I think he. I mean, you're talking about a draft class here, which I think has the potential for. If we're being realistic, I think four to five guys who could make the NHL.
Yeah.
Let's say 4.
I would say 4, I'm guessing.
6 who could, you know, 2 more who could have a shot, and 2 more who are, who knows. So, yeah. But like 4 NHLers in a 1 draft class is very impressive.
Yeah, they got to make it. They've got to get there.
Yeah.
But
to be fair, those 4 are Tomasino, Afanasyev, Chistiakov, and Parson.
Right.
And then I think the next 2 would be Campbell and Delgaiso, and then Hyder and Walter. Who knows?
All right. So to wrap this up, I guess just again, since we're talking draft, I kind of wanted to go through a couple of other classes and see, you know, get maybe a little bit of an update on what they're doing, what we should expect from them, and kind of where they're going to be next year. So I think we've mentioned David Ferentz again. He's returning to Boston next season for his 4th year, which again sparked some people on Twitter to start saying the name Jimmy Vesey, but I don't think that's going to be the case. I think he's a guy, I think, you know, Eric said he's probably going to be in Milwaukee after that. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think so.
He's a different player. He's a different kind of defender than Fabbro. I don't think there's going to be any issue as far as him actually signing his contract. I think he just wanted to take one more shot with Boston, which they should be pretty good next year, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. you know, we know about what Tolvanen's doing. I think, personally, I don't know that he should be a full-time player next season either. I think he should get a bunch more time than he has, but I don't know that he should be full-time yet. I don't think it's going to hurt him to play some more in Milwaukee, but I don't know. I mean, tell me if you disagree.
I am indifferent on that, to be honest.
Okay.
Yeah. Which is not a great answer, but I mean, I'm not particularly partial either way.
Yeah, I was going to say, because I mean, I don't know that he's completely, like, capped out at the AHL level, because I think he has some growing to do. But I also think that
I agree. I also am not necessarily sure that would be reflected in points, though. Like, I'm not sure that he's somebody who comes back and all of a sudden scores 30 more points at the AHL level. From a technical side of the game, yes, but yeah.
Okay. And so then I guess another from that class is Grant Mismatch, another one of your guys. This is from 2017 pick draft. So, you know, how's he doing?
Yeah, I mean, I was not a fan of that pick at the time. I'm still not a fan of that pick. Just very much like a – I mean, I get it, right? He's somebody who is a very physical player, is, you know, fundamentally good to okay at most other things of the game. And, like, you're looking at that U.S. national team that he came from, which was not fantastic because the U18 squad was guys that were playing a lot of, like, international time. So, like, Brady Tkachuk was on that team, but he was, like, gone for international stuff. Quinn Hughes, same thing. But, like, the rest of that squad was, like, Josh Norris led that team in scoring, who I think Josh Norris is very much an NHL player, or will be. And then second on that team in scoring was Mismatch. And I think that was more of a mirage than it was anything else.
Right.
I mean, I don't know. He's, like, you know, his sophomore year, so he had a really good freshman year, sophomore year injuries. Last year he was playing on the best line in all of college hockey and scored 8 goals. So
yeah, I almost called them by their old name, but yes, yeah.
I mean, like, it cannot be overstated how dominant him, Jordan Kawaguchi, and Colin Adams were as a line, and he looked like a passenger basically every night. And it's just like, I just don't see where his game goes from here. Like, I just don't think there's another element he can add to really get to the next level. Like, maybe he becomes a useful AHL player, but, like, I don't see an NHL player in this game. You know, again, I think intangibles are largely dumb, but, like, I think it's very notable that he is a senior this year at North Dakota and is not a captain. And this is a team that has, like, 5 captains.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like there are, like, underclassmen who are captains ahead of him.
And this is not, like, you know, this isn't just some program. Again, like, the only hockey I lived in North Dakota for 8 years of my life, and I watched a whole lot of UND hockey. And, you know, if you're a guy like this as a senior, you should be seeing stuff like this, you know, playing on top line. You should be seeing him as a captain. So that is a little bit concerning.
Yeah, I mean, he'll probably score, like, 30 points this year. I mean, depending on how the season goes. And I just, again, I can't see him any more than a okay AHL player, if that.
All right. And then I'm going to just talk about 2 or 3 more guys really quick. So first is going to be, and this is from 2016, the person that last offseason you ranked as, was it last offseason or 2 offseasons ago, that you
last
ranked
year.
The guy as the top prospect in the pipeline. And this was done pre-draft, correct?
Correct.
Yeah, and that's Rem Pitlick. And so, again, Poile talked about him, mentioned him by name as far as guys getting time in the NHL. I mean, do you think he's ready?
I think he's close. I mean, he certainly deserves some time, some call-up time this year. I mean, this is the thing that I think we're always a little... And I get it, right? Like, this is not an organization that has blessed us with many an opportunity, but, like, I can't, for instance, taking Tomasino as an example, I can't recall the last time they had a CHL player who hit 100 points. Like, I know Taylor Beck didn't. I know he got close, but he didn't. Like, that's a big deal. Like, that's a really big deal. And I don't think we, like, take for granted that, or we don't appreciate that enough. Rem Pitlick is someone who, like, set all sorts of records in his 2015-16 season in the USHL with Muskegon. Scored almost 90 points, which is a lot. Was one of the nation leaders in scoring his senior year in college. And it just kind of got, like, swept under the rug. Like, people were just like, eh, okay, you know? Like, he went into Milwaukee last year. He's the first Admiral since Victor Arvidsson to score 20 goals. In his first season in the AHL, 36 points, was getting time in all situations, was centering a line, you know, the rotating cast of characters, but with, you know, at times with Tolvanen, with Salamaki, with Gaudreau. I think he's someone who can play center and wing, but I think he's better as a center. You know, I don't think he's ready for full-time NHL action, but again, with the caveat that we may not have a full AHL season, and even if we do, you know, we can't expect, like, peak performance from these players necessarily. Right. Like, this is a guy in a normal second full season in NHL, I think could easily hit 50 points. So I don't think it's a stretch at all to say, like, he could play in the NHL in a season full-time and hit 30 points. I think he's that good. I think it's just about adding strength and just, you know, more consistency. You know, at a certain point, like, a prospect's skills cap out, right? And they're like, okay, like, this player's not going to get any better at, like,
you're standing off rough edges at that point.
Exactly. It's not that they're not going to get any better, right? Because, like, everyone, like, Austin Matthews got better year over year on a shot, right? And it's Austin Matthews. But what I mean is, they're not going to get any better to the point where, like, this particular skill, by doing more, will previously they weren't going to be an NHL player, and now they are, right? And so with him, I think a lot of things is just sanding off edges and really refining that complete game. And then I think he's fine, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I get people have concerns about his size, but I don't see them as an issue.
Yeah. And to your point, I had to check this because I thought, because you said that there wasn't, you know, again, Nashville doesn't draft from the OHL very often, have a ton of OHL players. And you said that besides Tomasino, there's not been a ton of guys that they've had as 100-point scorers. But there is one other guy that currently is on the team that scored 100 points in the OHL.
Is Austin Watson?
Oh, God, no. I could check, but I don't think so. No, Ryan Ellis did.
Oh, well, he's a defenseman. He doesn't count.
Excuse me.
That's an anomaly, though.
Which website do you write for? What team do you cover?
No, here's the thing. We're talking about, like, Ryan Ellis is, like, the greatest OHL defender of the century, right? Like, he was, like, literally, like, the Taylor Hall of, like, the OHL on defense. But in terms of, like, someone who, God, he really did score 100 points. Holy shit.
24 goals and 76 assists.
That Windsor team was insane. Oh,
I mean, they won.
God.
That was the year for them, wasn't it? It was them and Hall and
I don't even know if that was the year they won, actually.
Dude, this is 2010,
11.
Yeah.
Because I thought they won in, like, 2009.
Let's see. 2009 they won, and 2009 and 2010 they won. They lost in the conference finals in 2010, 2011.
Mm.
Yeah. Anyways, but yeah, Ellis was very good. But again, yeah, Nashville doesn't take a ton of OHL guys, but that guy worked out. Yeah.
That was a slam dunk, though. That we knew that was going to be. Like, there was simply no way he wasn't going to be as good as he was,
He had 89 points 2 years prior. My God. All right, yeah, no, I love Ryan Ellis, and we talk about that often, so that's fine. All right, sorry. Really quick. So we talked about Pitlick. I don't know. I may save the Allard question for something that we may write because
yeah, we shouldn't open that can of worms.
Yeah. So I'll ask you a quick question. Another 2016 pick. Does Hardy Hayman Achtel exist?
Yes, he does.
Okay. Just
He's
make
real.
Sure.
I've seen him.
Okay. Are you sure? All right.
They're not in the organization anymore, sadly.
Yeah. Like my last question, I guess, will be about their second round pick in 2015, a guy they just gave a 2-year one-way contract to, and a guy, from what I've read, and if I remember correctly, you have ranked higher than the other guy that I'm hoping that they sign in Yakov Trenin. I think based on their NHL time, I think Blackwell's
a little bit more complete of a player. And but
I mean, he's also like 6 years older too.
That's true. Yes, but I want to get your thoughts on, because again, we're gonna see Jakob Trenin next year. Like, we've got that's locked in now. Basically, his time in Milwaukee's for the most part done. So, what can we expect out of him?
Yeah, I mean, I think it'll be interesting to see how that bottom six really looks. You know, Blackwell's still a free agent. Who knows what's up with Austin Watson, you know, these things. But
you mean Austin Watson, the guy who's starting the first of his three-year contract at $1.5 million?
God, are you kidding me?
Yeah, that extension
is unbelievable.
That's unreal.
You know,
former first-round pick.
It's so obvious that, like, at many points this season that David Poile regretted that extension, like, the second he signed it. And I'm like, well, then why did you do it? But whatever.
I think I said this in maybe the locker room things, but I think this is one of those things where the organization wanted to help out.
Yeah.
I don't know why they helped out with a three-year contract, but I think that's what they did.
I also think there was a bit of a different sense of urgency / pressure when Laviolette was still here in regards to his situation, and John Hines is obviously not as connected to that scenario, but
Hines put him back into the playoffs anyways. Sorry,
he also Trenin scratched him too. I think Jakob Trenin is going to be someone who's probably a useful bottom six player for a while, who is not like a net negative on the ice in terms of shot share and you know, things of that nature. I think he's definitely graduated from the AHL. I mean, it was over a point per game last year in the AHL, scored 20 goals in 32 games. You know, he is someone I think that they should experiment with using on the power play moving forward, especially if you're having guys like Granlund and Smith leave. You know, I think he's just like, that's the thing, right? It's like when you look at teams like Tampa and stuff like that, like Cedric Paquette isn't good, or like, you know, Pat Maroon isn't good. The difference is that they're not bad, right? Like, the problem in that this organization has failed to address at both on the blue line and up front is that they're not just using replacement level players or slightly above replacement level players for depth. They're using like significantly net negative players, right?
Yeah. Yep.
And it's like nobody's saying like Colin Blackwell is like going to score 20 goals because he isn't. But also, if Colin Blackwell can get off the ice with like a shot share that is above 50%, then like, please, you know? Like, that isn't getting, like, shelled in his own end for 2 minutes a shift, like, that would be great. And I think that's exactly what Jakob Trenin brings to the table. Again, I think he can probably score 10, 15 goals down the line, but, you know, he's not going to be a star. But, again, you have to fill out this roster with players that can succeed, not players that you can shelter most of the game and then throw out there, close your eyes, and hope for the best, you know?
Yeah, and to your point, some really smart person did the review on Colin Blackwell's season last year, and out of like his top like 9 or 10 line combinations he played with, only I think two of those combinations had below 50% shot share. So you know, Blackwell had a really, really weird season last year that he played with so many different. I mean, he spent 5 games with Sissons and Johansson. Which is weird. And then, you know, he spent 9 games with Turris and Smith. I thought the Blackwell Turris Trenin line actually was pretty good. I liked that line, oddly enough, for Turris, but I like Blackwell a lot. And I think he's a guy maybe you can put in on a third line, but we'll see. So, so I think that's going to about do it. I think, because we got another guy that we basically Poile said is going to be playing next year. And Carrier, just real quick about him.
Yeah, I mean, look, like, it's the same thing, right? Like, you know, obviously Danahan is retiring. It seems clear Yannick Weber will not be back. Jared Tinordi inexplicably has a spot on this roster next year. But, you know, Corbinian Hulser will be gone. you just got to be filling out this roster again with these guys that at the very least can mitigate these chances against. I'm not the biggest fan of Carrier. I think he's got some skating issues that he's failed to address in this time in the AHL. It's clear this team thinks he's ready for full-time NHL duty. I mean, he's not any worse than the other options they've been rolling out, and I think he's probably reached his apex in the AHL, so I get it. But, you know, this isn't someone like Jeremy Davies, who I think is like a legitimate top four potential. Like, I think Carrier is more of a bottom pair guy.
Yeah. So. Yeah, or him, or, you know, someone like Frederick Villard, but yeah. Okay, well, I think that's going to cover. I think that's, you know, I just wanted to kind of hit on some of those guys in the past drafts that we're going to be seeing a whole lot more of. I again, really, really appreciate you joining me for these two. I know this is a lot, and you've been super busy for, like, the last month, and you're going to be even busier probably for the next week and a half, 2 weeks. But, yeah, if you want to go ahead and tell us, you know, where we can find you, what you've got in the pipeline real quick, and so that way people can make sure they're paying attention to what you do.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at OnTheFutureOTF. And this week I will have stories coming out, I think, almost every day. Definitely tomorrow, Tuesday, is night one of the NHL draft. I'll have a bit of a quick react to each pick afterwards. Wednesday's day two, I'll kind of have a quick summary of the Preds' two-day work, and then in the days after that, I'll have a more in-depth video breakdown of each of Nashville's picks, so be on the lookout for all that.
All right. Well, thank you, Eric, again. We would be lost without you, so we're really, really glad to have you. Talking about this podcast, this is episode 4, I believe. And now we've got a little bit more information for you. So you can find the dedicated Twitter account for this podcast at ForecheckPod on Twitter. We're going to go ahead and you'll see that as we post this episode tomorrow, hopefully. And pay attention because Sean, one of our other co-hosts, he has some giveaways that we may be giving away, giving to you guys as far as, you know, following the Twitter account and everything like that. So make sure you guys are listening out for that. You should be able to find the podcast in Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, I believe. It should be there by now. There's some of these, it took us a little while to kind of sort out whatever the deal was with this, but yeah, and so make sure you guys are doing like that locker room where we do our kind of more of our live reaction stuff. We should be going live into like wider circulation on the iOS App Store soon. We'll give you more information on that. And then keep an eye out during draft on Tuesday and Wednesday. We may be doing a little bit of live streaming stuff there too. So again, I'm Brian Baston. You can find me on Twitter at Brian Baston, Brian with a Y. And yeah, we've got a ton of stuff for you, and make sure you guys are keeping an eye on the forecheck, because this is going to be a very busy off season. So thanks once again to SB Nation and Box Media for having us on here, and we will see you guys next time.